Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello, everybody. Andy Burt here. Happy New Year to you. I hope you had a great Christmas and I hope you enjoyed a very well-deserved rest over the Christmas break as well. I hope you're all set for 2026. Here at Early Excellence, we've got some very exciting things happening in terms of outdoor learning. First of all, we've got our launch of our new outdoor resource collections, and we've got lots to share with you. Do keep your eyes out. We've put together a YouTube clip with all sorts of information about the materials, about the resources, how they've been carefully selected, and the purposes behind them. So we've got lots there for you to explore. Alongside that, what else have we got? Well, we've got lots of outdoor roadshows coming up as well. Our outdoor roadshows are training events where we bring along our outdoor stores, we bring along our outdoor resources and collections so that you can have a really good explore of the resource collections as well as getting high quality training too. What we'll do is we'll put the links into the podcast information for both of those things, for the launch of our outdoor resource collections and also for our outdoor roadshow training events. Those events coming to a venue near you, wherever you happen to be in the country. So watch out for those links. Okay. Now, staying on the theme of outdoors, for episode 191 of the podcast, we're joined by Lana Webster from the Early Years Academy in Derby as we explore the wonder, the magic, but also, of course, the practicalities of forest school experiences. So here you go. Here's my podcast, my Early Excellence podcast chat with Lana Webster, all about forest schools. Lovely to see you, Lana. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And you?
I'm very well. Very well. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
You're welcome.
So we're going to be talking all about outdoor learning, of course, and I'm really interested to find out about your setting because I know you do loads and loads of things outdoors. You do such a lot of inspirational stuff. So there's lots that we can get into. Before we get onto that, could you give us an introduction? Would that be all right? Tell us about yourself.
Absolutely. My name's Lana. I have been qualified since 1998. And then I went to college and did my NNEB. And I did my forest school training 8 years ago. So I've worked in several settings from nurseries, nannying, playgroups, community working. And then I decided that I really enjoyed the outdoor learning and what I could provide for the children. And once I qualified and got my forest school leader position, I found that I could provide an awful lot for the children for holistic development.
Yeah, really, that's a really interesting background. I think that NNEB qualification is a brilliant qualification to have.
It's fantastic. It's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah, I say this a lot on the podcast, but whenever I meet people who've got that qualification, you know actually that they will be of a really high standard in terms of as a teacher or practitioner. There's lots of teachers out there who started off with that NNEB training and then have built on it. There's lots of people with that NNEB training who've then gone on to do loads of other things like yourself in terms of forest schools. The depth of it in terms of child development, I think, is brilliant. And there's a real quality there. There's a real sort of mark of quality, I think, people who've got it.
And there's a real, that qualification, obviously, it's a career path into, imagine a roundabout and lots of different roads you can go on. So it does give you a lot of confidence as well, I think, because the learning is completely different and it's really like gets to teach you like the whole backgrounds of where the education came from and what you can do. So
absolutely, the depth of training is brilliant. It really is. And I think it really sets you on a good path. It definitely does. Okay, so that's a little bit about yourself. What about your setting? Tell us about your setting. Where are you?
So we're in Derby at the Early Years Academy on Duffield Road. I've been here 2 years now, 2 years in January. We are a very large nursery of 120 place, from babies all the way through to preschool. We have a very large, I would say, I'm not sure whether Edwardian or Georgian building, but it's very large. We have listed trees and things like that that we can't touch in the grounds. We have everything from cellar to conference rooms, the training rooms. Obviously, babies are on the first floor, toddlers are on the ground floor, and then we have a separate building for preschoolers. And obviously, we have our fabulous teepee in our grounds with several gardens.
Yes, you do, which is what we're going to be talking about, of course.
Yes,
and we're
absolutely
going to be talking all about forest schools, and I'm sure we will get onto the teepee, which sounds very exciting.
A magical place of awe
and wonder. Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so we're going to be talking about forest schools, and I think as a good starting point, I always think of it chronologically. Was there a spark? Was there a moment where you were actually the forest schools at your setting took off?
So we have a lady who's called The Coo. She started forest schooling at our Derby site. We do forest schoolers at our other site as well. And there are five sites now. And a lady called Amy, and she, because I was part-time when I first started, she basically took it on, and they wanted to do the whole outdoor learning approach. And obviously, once I started here, I began full time and then carried it on. First of all, we were going to the woods quite frequently. And then a year ago, they said to me that they're having a teepee and building it, and the men were here to put it up.
And you never looked back.
No, absolutely not. I mean, why would you? It's such a magical place to be.
Absolutely. Okay. So you already had sort of some of the kind of the key things in place before the TP arrived, in that you were going out there a lot. You've got probably the right principles, I would think, you know, getting out there right the way through the year by the sound of it, and really enjoying being outdoors for longer periods of time. Is that right?
That's right. We're never, and it's called never the wrong weather. It's the wrong clothing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So then the TP arrived. Describe the TP to us, if you can.
Okay, so it's a large teepee. It goes, it's not a round, it's definitely like more like a wigwam shape. And so it's got a wooden floor, we have a ramp, we have two very large wooden doors. Inside, we have got obviously pegs, we've got a peg rack where children can walk in, take the wellies off, and just get comfortable in there. It's a nice cozy environment. We have several spaces for malleable play, small world. We've got wooden cars, ramps, blankets, not forgetting our reed diffuser, so we have different smells that we can have in there. We have got electric.
I was going to ask you about that, you know, whether you had electric.
We do, yes, we have. Obviously it does get cold, so we put our heaters on first thing in the morning. It's all lit up with fairy lights, and we have a couple of like lamps in there as well. So it's all very, to a child's eye, it's very magical.
Yes, I'm sure. Okay. And when I chatted to you before, because we chatted a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, about sort of the content for the podcast, what really struck me as something that I was surprised at, and but also I think really positive about, was that you were telling me about that you have a basically like a 12-week span, that once you're out and you're in the wigwam and you're using that wigwam, and then you're out from there in terms of exploring the outdoor space, groups of children are in there for 12 weeks at a time. Can you describe that to us?
That's correct. So before the children come down to join us on their adventure for the 12 weeks, we have a on our family app, we invite parents to come down and have a nice hygge moment for the children that are coming down for the next 12 weeks.
Yes.
We give them a jacket, waterproof jacket and trousers in a pack with a tote bag as a first meeting. And they obviously get to be in the teepee, come and see myself and Kelly, my colleague. She's also level two, just qualified. And they come and just have that sense of ownership, so they can get to know the team, the teepee, the surroundings, what we will be teaching them for the 12 weeks, just to get to know us, really. And it's not we've never been strangers to them. We're always a part of the bigger team, bigger picture. But it's nice just for them to, it's our moment for them to get to know us a bit more.
Yes. And presumably there may well be some parents who feel sort of a bit wary of that their child is going to be outside for that amount of time over the next 12 weeks. And
of
that
course,
they might
of
be
course,
concerned
we have...
about toileting or about them being afraid of being in the woods or whatever it might be. Is that the case?
So it is actually, yes. It's always, we put the child's name on the list, and then that initial meeting is for the parents to have a real think about what time of year they'd like their child to come to forest school.
Okay.
And they do have the choice on whether they want to back out and then wait until the spring, summer months when it's a little bit warmer, or whether they want to stay with us during the colder months. And as I said, it's always the right clothing. It's, you know, they need to be dressed up and keep warm. And also for the clothes to be comfortable for the children. So lots of layers rather than chunky jumpers and things. So they do have the choice. It's never you have to do it. It's, we obviously list off the benefits of forest school. And then go from there. It's up to the children and the parents.
Okay, so that's a really interesting. I think just that idea of, I think, working with parents on, you know, this is what we're going to do, and being very upfront and saying that this is the length of time we're going to be outside for over a 12-week period.
Absolutely.
And this is why we believe in it. These are the real positives to it, and these are the experiences your children are going to have.
Mm.
I think being upfront in that way and having that positive culture around it is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's up to the parents. So over that 12 weeks, they'll basically, the first couple of weeks is about road safety. They're getting to know us as a team, exploring the grounds at our grounds within the nursery, and obviously exploring the forest school grounds in the woods.
Yes. And road safety, because you cross over the road to get to the forest school site. Is that right?
We cross the roads to go to the woods. Our setting has the forest school within the grounds. But when we go to the woods, we make sure, you know, with high-vis jackets on, the parents know when they're going out because we have an app that marks them out.
Okay.
Ratios are lower. It's 1-4 instead of 1-8 when we go
okay.
out.
Okay. Yeah.
We make sure the children are holding hands. We're always, if there's three members of staff, there's always one at the front, one in the middle, one at the back. We stick closely to the wall. There's a wall on the main road, so we stick closely to that, checking the children are happy at all times. And then obviously the first couple of weeks we go into crossing the road safely, going into the middle of the road, looking both ways and carrying on. Luckily where we live, we get quite a nice number of buses. So the buses let us go across the road quite a lot. So we give them a little wave.
Yeah, that's good. And I mean, it's a learning experience, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, there is a risk there and so on. But actually, you know, it's a learning experience, isn't it? And that it's a managed risk.
Absolutely.
And it is important. Yeah. No, that's great. Okay. So you've got the teepee.
Mm-hmm.
Within the teepee, you've got waterproofs, I think you said, and Wellington boots so that you're all togged up and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure people listening to this are going to ask, what about thing? If you're out there for 12 weeks at a time, presumably you've thought about every little thing
Absolutely.
That you could possibly do, you know, and so, you know, you're presumably not traipsing into the build back into the school building.
No,
in every building,
that is the ultimate
every time
question.
Anybody wants the toilet. So what's happening there then?
That is the ultimate question.
It says it's bound to be, isn't it? Yeah.
So we have got portaloos. We have got a toilet shed, and it is cleaned very often, and it is emptied very regularly. Obviously, we keep it clean with like the clinical products, which only, you know, we have to dispose, wear gloves, aprons, and get the job done, basically.
Yes, not a pleasant job, but has to be done. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But the children are very, very keen. They're very excited. We still have that sort of like independence of getting them to use the toilet on their own and things like that, even for the younger children that have just come to us. And giving them the support that they need when it comes to toileting. Also, we're even though we're still forest school through and through, we're still very clean.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we have our wild wees every now and again in the woods because, like, you have to.
Sometimes you have to. Yeah, yeah.
Got to be done.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay. So we've got the teepee set up. We've got the portable potties and portable toilets and so on. Okay. Then we go across the road. We're into the forest. What sorts of, over a 12-week period, do you have, is it structured? Do you have a week of on certain tools or certain skills and then a week on something else? Or do you do it kind of as you feel, you know, or based on the needs of the children? How do you do it?
So we do have a structure, but it's a very loose structure. We call it more a spark. So for example, if I have something planned, but the children have actually have used that, they might be, because some children do come for 12 weeks and then stay on.
Yes.
And then some children go and then come back, sort of thing. So if they're interested in something, if they have that spark and I really want to use the hammer, or I really want to make something with a bow saw, or I'm not going to stop them if that's their spark and we can grow on that. For example, last week we had a child that has been with Forest School before and they were very interested in the bow saw and cutting the wooden logs because they wanted to make a Christmas decoration for their tree. So obviously one child starts the spark and then obviously lots of other children observe that and they want to turn. So we go ahead. There's always time. We always make time for obviously cutting the wood, being safe, modelling it,
yes,
and then continuing to make the hole as well for the Christmas decoration. You need to use a palm drill. So we go ahead and we get the palm drills out, whether it's the hand tool or the kind of like the wheel, wheel one. And they go ahead. And as long as they're staying safe with it, I've modelled it, or my colleague Kelly, she's modelled it, that's fine. There's no, as long as all risks are assessed.
Yeah. So you're teaching a skill.
Yeah.
And modelling it, showing how to use it, how to handle it and what not to do. And then you're giving the children a go at doing it and them having an idea of how they're going to use it. Yes. And these are very young children, aren't they? You're talking about children who are generally 3 and 4. Is that right?
Literally just turned 3, some of them. Yeah. And then obviously 3 to 5-year-olds, because some of our children obviously go to school next September.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
But as I said, if they're sparks, then we run
with
that.
No, absolutely. I think that's great. I think there's a real power in that, isn't there? That yes, there are times when actually we bring things to the children and we try to get them interested in something. But actually, where you can, I think, responding to what the children and what their ideas are is often more powerful. They're already motivated. They're already interested in it. And you adding the learning into what they're already interested in is generally a far more powerful model, I think.
Absolutely.
So no, I think that's really interesting. Yeah, really interesting. But what's also interesting, I think, is the range of tools that you've already talked about, you know, from a hammer to a palm drill, I think you mentioned just before,
yeah,
and a bow saw, I think you mentioned
yeah,
that before. The range of different tools that you must have access to, that sounds pretty great and quite varied. Is that right?
We're very lucky. What we try and do is get their gross motor skills working to build up that strength, to promote and strengthen their fine motor skills.
Yes.
So, for example, some weeks we start off with whittling, using vegetable peelers to whittle carrots, parsnips, anything, root vegetable. And then we start whittling sticks. And then we go on from there, basically, to palm drills, hammers, bow saws, anything, basically, anything that the children want to use. I haven't yet used one of the knives, whittling knives, I must admit, but that is something that is the next, I think, with me, the
yeah,
next step.
Yeah, yeah. But in a way, I think that's okay. You know, you have to be confident with something in order to
absolutely,
introduce it
yeah,
yourself, don't you? And I think that's fair enough. Now, what's interesting, though, is that we are talking about very young children, and I know that using tools with very young children for many people is quite a hang-up. You know, that often on training, I'll talk about, you know, often in passing, I'll talk about, say, a woodwork area or something like that. And you can see people glancing at one another and kind of mouthing the name of a child. You know, can you imagine this child
yeah,
with
yeah,
a hammer? You know, that kind of thing. And I get that, you know, that yes, there are sometimes children that you think, oh, crikey, what would they be like with an actual hammer? But in my experience, as a teacher, prior to my work at Early Excellence as a teacher, I used to have a woodwork area, and what I would generally find, well, in fact, 100% of the time I found, was that actually children, when given a real tool, responded differently to it to when if you gave them what was obviously a toy tool of some sort.
Yeah.
Give them a real hammer, and actually they will hold it carefully. They know that there's some responsibility Mm-hmm. With it, even with very young children, they understand there's an element of responsibility with
yep. It's a sense of pride as well.
Absolutely.
I can use this tool, watch me. You know, we teach them how to use the hammer, for example, but then there's the safety goggles. We have safety gloves as well. And then we always model the tools before the children use them. You show them the correct way of holding the hammer, because our hammers, some of them have got claws on the other side so they can take the real nails out as well, which the children, you know, they're like, wow. So we started off with Halloween. We had pumpkins and golf tees, and they had endless fun. And the journey that they went on with these, making patterns into the pumpkins and taking them out with the claw the other end, it was fascinating, actually. And it was a real... Yeah, they learned some real skills. So I was very proud that moment.
Yeah, no, really interesting stuff. Interesting. So yeah, there's lots there, isn't there, around kind of risk and challenge and responsibility that I think, you know, even with your very young children at three, they're getting used to the idea of using materials that are real materials and that are physically challenging.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, definitely. Interesting stuff. Do you have, so I'm trying to picture the forest itself and kind of what you do there. Is it all completely dense wood, or is there a clearing? Do you have a fire pit, or is that near the teepee? You know, can you describe it to us?
I can, yeah. So our forest school area within the grounds, you kind of walk out of preschool into preschool garden, and there's a gate. All of the forest school area has wood chip. We have on the right hand side, as you can imagine, walking down, we have got tables, and we've now got a dining shelter, which is covered in fairy lights. And then we have our fire pit next to that. It's quite a large fire pit, all measured out, so it's very, very safe. We have got mud kitchen, obviously the bathroom shed, as we call it. obviously the teepee itself is quite a large structure, so it takes up, it's up to 16 children. Our teepee. And there's water play, there's mud, lots and lots of mud. They like building shelters. So that's just within the grounds. And then when we go to the woods, it's at Darley Park. So we basically explore the woodland, whatever the weather. So you can imagine we take things with us, such as we could take a big bag of clay with us, give the children some clay, and they would like stick it to the tree, find lots of natural things around the floor. Obviously, I've looked around the grounds and risk assessed it beforehand.
Yes. Yeah.
So obviously it's a public place.
Yes.
And then the children will make faces on the trees or animals, and using natural products that they found and natural resources. Or as easy as jumping in muddy puddles and slipping and sliding down the hill.
You know, sometimes it's about finding a stick or as you say, jumping over a puddle or balancing on a log or
That's
whatever
right.
it might be.
Climbing a tree.
You find all sorts of things, don't you, when you're outdoors and you're in kind of like a woodland space or something like that. You find things that are interesting.
That's right. Yeah. It's as I said, it's up to the children's voice. It's, you know, what we went to the woods once, and my deputy manager always remembers the children found some wild garlic. And we were talking about the smell and how it smelt, and what we could do with it. And instead of just leaving it there, we decided to take a couple of cuttings. We brought it back to our forest school and made some garlic bread. So all the opportunities were there. And if their spark and I can see it working in their mind, why not? There's endless opportunities with foraging in the woods or finding those blackberries to make the apple and blackberry crumble back at the forest. So yeah, the list is endless. The journey's incredible.
Yes, brilliant. Okay. And you said that you have 12 weeks. So a 12-week span of working with one group of children.
That's correct.
Which sounds really interesting, that way of doing it, in that I would imagine that you really get to do things in depth with those children and carry things on from one day to the next to the next. So if
That's
a child,
right. yeah.
You know, you talk about spark, don't you? If that spark has appeared, you know, and they found something on one day in the week, you can then, because you've got those children, you know, over subsequent days, over consecutive days, you can then keep it going. You know, are we going to see that again? You know, that kind of idea.
Exactly. That's right. I mean, we have got a huge whiteboard under our shelter and we do write down the children's sparks and then try to extend, obviously, when we're sitting down having a meal or sitting down around the campfire. Myself and my colleague Kelly, we're always talking about, you know, we've done this today and we've learned this today, but how can we extend that learning for them? What can we do? We say to the children, what would you like to make? Obviously, Christmas is a massive, massive novelty at the minute. And the children really do want to make sort of like Rudolph out of wooden logs or decorations. And there's nothing that I won't really say no to.
No, that's all. But interestingly, I think that model of talking with the children, observing the children, being engaged with the children, talking with the children, and then talking with the adults together about, well, what have we seen? What sparks have we noticed? What could carry on? How might we support that and develop that further? That's not just about being in a forest. That's about effective early years practice, isn't it? And that, yes, the experiences Absolutely. Might be different, but actually the model itself is about effective practice, I think.
Always listen to the children, because at the end of the day, they're our future. And, you know, listening to your children to extend their learning is the best. I always feel a sense of proud and a sense of pride. And I've taught them that, or they've learned that from that small spark.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I think how engaged they are and how motivated they are, I think, tells you such a lot about your setting, really. You know, if it's working, you can see it generally in the children's faces. You can see it in that kind of spark, that, you know, their facial expressions, being engaged, being fascinated by something. You can see the quality of the setting in the responses of the children. And yeah, by the absolutely. Sound of it, you can absolutely see that at your setting.
Yeah, we do have a fabulous time. It's very magical and it's all about awe and wonder here.
Yeah, no, definitely. Okay, so what's interesting as well is that you talk about the 12-week period where actually they are there with you the whole time. Interestingly, because you've got obviously your children from 3 right the way up to when they then leave to go to reception, go to primary school, they presumably have more, maybe not always, but have more opportunity to come again. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So if, for example, some children come to me just as they turn 3, obviously they've got all the way through till they go to school next year. So they normally have the opportunity to come twice, whether it's straight away, but more or less, if myself or my colleagues see a child that has progressed so much and that their holistic approach and their development towards forest school, for me, and I can see them hungry for more, so yes. to speak, I will keep them on. Yeah, for the next cohorts. Why not? Why would you disturb a child's learning if they're really engrossed and in depth?
Absolutely. I think you've also then got the scope for that kind of peer-to-peer learning, haven't you, where mm-hmm. one child with their fascination for something is going to kind of bring that spark to perhaps other children and they notice what they're doing.
Absolutely, yeah. And then they learn from each other.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Which brings us quite nicely onto the impact on the children. You know, what is it that you see in your children that's a direct result of the work that we do with them in forest schools? What is it that you see?
Their impact in learning, what I get out of it more for them is the children's learning to take risks.
Yes.
You know, it's not a, you know, when I teach them and I model them how to use a tool or climb in a tree, as simply as which branch to put your foot on first and will I fall over or I need support or I need help, or even as simple as it sounds, a child doing their coat up and helping them with their zips and the impact of I've done it, you know, I've done my own zip.
That independence, yeah.
Yeah, they're gaining their independence. And to me, the impact of the child's life, just to be in different weather and to be outside all the time, you know, they do get the chance and they can go in the TP, it's free flow basically, whether they want to be inside or outside. Most of the time they're outside.
Do you feel that the children are more resilient because they have such a long period of time where they are outside?
Absolutely. And I've definitely noticed the difference this year that with colds and things like that and the bugs that are going around at this time of year, I noticed that I can see myself and my colleague and the children that I've got now, I don't see a lot of runny noses. And I think just because they're getting so much fresh air, I feel like they eat more. They're hungry, which is a good thing. They're learning to eat different things. We have an allotment as well. I didn't know whether I said that.
No, you didn't. Yeah, that's interesting.
So we're growing our food, and we're learning about the food that we grow, the plants that we grow. Our meals are supplied by our chef in the kitchen.
Okay. Yes.
But anything extra we have in the afternoons, we cook it ourselves. You know, we're cooking pizza or healthy, like apple slices on fire, hot chocolate. Somebody said the other day they wanted hot juice, obviously sugar-free. So we have made that on the fire.
That sounds fab.
So it's a massive impact on...
Yeah, no, definitely. Both in terms of those characteristics, you know, resilience and independence and all of those sorts of things, but also what they're learning. These are different skills, aren't they? You know, they're learning to climb a tree or learning a new tool or whatever it might be. These are very different sorts of skills that they probably won't have encountered before. So no, always exactly. Make it interesting. Okay, so we've talked about impact on the children. What about the impact on the staff? Have you noticed a change in yourself in terms of your practice? And what about your colleagues? Has there been an impact, do you think, in the way that you work? Has it impacted on you in terms of your own practice, do you think?
For myself, my resilience in being outside is making sure I've worn the right thermals for the day. Yeah. And making sure I've got my winter socks on. But, I mean, the impact that I have is just watching the children. And the same goes for my colleague. She's a level two. As I said, level two forest school. She's got a way about her, and she even, you know, picks up 1 minute, so-and-so's doing this. I would like to this afternoon extend it by learning a different way. We find with our well-being, we're always happier when we're outside as well. As soon as we go back into the preschool, it's like we've got the teepee. But one of the children have even said to me today that we've got no doors apart from on the teepee. I said, no, you're right. I said, our roof is the sky. You know, we can be outside all the time. And I find that with myself and my colleague, Kelly, we're quite resilient to the weather. We enjoy the fresh air. Yeah, we're quite open to activities. We have the children outside more or less for about eight hours a day.
So, yeah, it's a long time, isn't it? But interestingly, I think I think as a teacher or practitioner, your relationship with time changes when you're outdoors. I think that when you are indoors, you know, you often find that you're kind of looking at the clock and you're thinking, right, oh, I need to be doing this now and I need to be finished this by now and we need to rush and we need to get there and we need to stop for this and stop for that. Outdoors, you don't tend to do that as much in my experience. You know, you're outside, you probably, yes, you might have your phone or you might have your watch on, but you're not as likely to kind of be as aware of the time. And I think that's a good thing, you know, in that you then become more engrossed and engaged in what the children are doing.
Absolutely.
In quite a childlike way, you know, in the way that children are generally not governed by time. Children don't think, oh, I need to be doing this now. It's been half an hour or whatever. They just find something that interests them in a natural way. And then actually time just flows. And I think actually Absolutely. The best practice often is when adults can leave the clock behind and engage with children in that childlike way where they give them as much time as they can.
That's right. I don't wear a watch and neither does Kelly.
Yeah.
So most of the time we only know the time when Tasha, our chef, comes down with the food and we think, oh my, how is that time already?
Yes, but I think that's positive. I think that's a positive thing. I think often you find, when you think of your childhood memories, I think often the kind of the best memories that people have as children are those memories where actually time has kind of slipped away and you were doing something for ages and ages and then you realized that it was getting dark or, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Where you're on a beach and you spend the whole afternoon sort of damming off a stream or whatever it might be.
That's right.
You know, those sorts of experiences stay with you because actually you are so engrossed in it. And I think we lose some of that when we manage the time in a different way.
Yeah, I remember when I was younger and my mum always used to say to me, come home when the streetlights go on.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as you're safe.
Yeah, and I think there is a value in that. really. Yeah, I think there's
absolutely
something quite healthy about that, but also I think there's a value in it in terms of learning and engagement. So yeah, no, I think it's great what you do in terms of time. I think that's great. And clearly that time aspect is, you know, I was asking, we were talking about the impact on staff. I think that time aspect is probably one of the impacts, I think, that actually you as adult kind of step away from the time a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. Especially and the children as well, because obviously we always have like the drinks, a jug of water or a jug of milk on the side, and the children can help themselves. And you know, because they have that independence of pouring their own drink and having a drink when they need it. But yeah, even the, or, you know, I'm hungry, when's lunchtime? And then you think, oh, actually, what is the time? And then you look at your watch and think, oh, okay, now it is time to do this. But I'm not one for being a stickler. I don't wear a watch. I don't really, we have phones, because obviously we have the family app and we check it for like parent messages or obviously signing children in and out. But I don't really say, you know, I need to look at the time, because we're so engrossed with the children's learning, either what they want to learn or to search something. I leave the time. Yeah. But no, you don't need it.
Good. No, it sounds good. It sounds healthy to me. Okay. All right. Last thing then, because I feel like I ought to let you go, really. The end of a busy day for you. I was going to ask you about what's next. You know, so you've obviously gone on a real journey here. You've got the TP is in place. You've got the fire pit that's there. You've got the trips to forest schools as well. You've got lots that's already embedded. From speaking to you and also from speaking to many people over the years who are like you with that spark for learning, people often like you don't stand still for long. And they tend to have something in mind that they want to do next to build on what they currently do. So I was interested to know, kind of, for you, what that next step might be.
Well, the setting itself, we've actually got another TP at the stone setting.
Yes.
Got another member of staff on board there now. We've actually, like, we've set up the group chat and we're looking forward to all doing our sort of skills days together, our outdoor learning. I know you've got one coming
that's
up.
That's right.
So yeah, we're looking into booking that together, but they have got a larger TP at the stone setting. I think it's about 30 children, double hours. And that's going to be opening in, I think it's this week.
That sounds brilliant. Also, at your setting where you're based, you've got, we've talked about 3 to 5 year olds, haven't we? But am I right in thinking you've got younger children?
We have. We've got babies. Yeah, babies all the way up to preschool.
Okay.
5 year olds.
And has that ever been part of the conversation of bringing younger children out?
It has. In fact, it was about a month ago where we invited the toddlers, had a camping day, and they asked me if they could bring their children and the parents down to just have a little snack with crumpets and hot chocolate around the fire. And it was really lovely to see their faces glowing. I see the parents really having hygge moments with them. I'll be there around the fire, obviously manning it and having magical hygge moments around the fire. That's a bit of me. So yeah, it'll be a special moment.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah, definitely. Lana, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's
you
been
are
brilliant
more than welcome.
To talk to you all about, you know, all of the things that you do and that you've put in place. There's such a lot there, I think, that's really interesting. I'm sure people who are listening along will find it really interesting to hear all about what you do with children who are really young, you know, with 3-year-old children with tools and, you know, being outdoors for such long periods of time and the benefits of that. I think it's brilliant to hear about how you do it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Lana for joining us for this week's episode of the podcast. And of course, thank you as well to you people for listening along too. That's about it from us for this week. Have a good week, everybody, and we'll see you next time.